Welcome to Women, Work, Wellbeing. I'm your host, Zoe Hayden-Jones. Each week, expect a blend of heartfelt conversations, expert advice, and actionable tips designed to support you in achieving your professional goals, finding harmony in your personal life, and cultivating wellbeing that resonates with who you truly are. This is more than a podcast. It's a community, a movement, and your personal catalyst for transformation.
I loved my chat with Amy, and I promise you, you will learn something from this episode, whether you have your own business, whether you're employed, whether you're doing a little bit of both. I know lots of women out there with a side hustle. Amy's got such a wealth of experience. She talks about starting her own business. She started in recruitment. She went on to found an online learning platform, which was basically acquired. So she has so much experience. Amy shares her insights on being a woman at work, being a woman having her own business. And she also talks about how she basically started a YouTube channel from a kitchen. Just honestly, she is incredible. So here are five things that you will learn from listening. Number one, how to document your accomplishments. If you heard of the term brag file, if you haven't, you need to listen and you need to start one now. Number two, strategies for networking intentionally and surrounding yourself with high achieving mentors and peers. And those that you can mentor. I think we often think about this and it's in the back of our mind, but are you proactively going after surrounding yourself with those people? If not, then you need to listen and start now. Number three, tips for asking for a promotion. I know that there are a lot of women that have money blockers or just don't feel confident to ask for a promotion. So Amy dives into that, including a skills gap analysis. Number four, Amy talks about the importance of focusing on feelings of confidence over just roles or tasks when planning your career. And number five, advice on entrepreneurship from Amy's perspective, which is basically a founder's perspective. Amy talks about the challenges, the time commitment, and also lifestyle considerations. So there's so much jam-packed into this episode. It's a really interesting one. Hope you enjoy. Here's the show. So welcome to another episode of Women, Work, Wellbeing. I am very excited to welcome this week's guest. We have Amy Bateman, who is a founder, mentor, and coach. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Zoe. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited. We met, didn't we? I feel like it was months ago now, but we've already connected and I feel like we have such a synergy. So I'm so excited that you're here to share your wisdom. Can you just, let's just set the scene. What a title, founder, mentor and coach. What is your background?
So I've been in the people development space for 22 years now. Started off in recruitment. So I spent a decade helping talent acquisition teams find the right people for their businesses. And then when the credit crunch hit in sort of 2010, 2011, there were a lot of really talented people that were out of work through no fault of their own. It was, you know, it was the global crash, right? So we were having a lot of people coming into our work, really talented people, like I said, and we didn't have any jobs for them. There were no, you know, nobody was ringing us up and saying, you know, can you find me a management accountant? Can you, you know, everybody was struggling. So, and I love people. I wake up every day thinking, how many people can I love and support today? It's kind of like that's in like my DNA. So I felt really bad. You know, I had people leaving our offices crying. So I jumped onto YouTube. I just bought a little camera for about £10, a secondhand camera on eBay, and started making these videos in my kitchen saying, this is how you, basically to help people not need me, right? Not need recruiters so that they could go out and do it themselves and advocate for themselves and find their voice and communicate their value in a ridiculously difficult market. So this is how you write a CV. This is how you write a cover letter. And it was 2010. So there was nobody really doing anything on YouTube in the careers space. YouTube certainly wasn't the platform that it is now. It was, people were still watching cats do funny things in water. A lot of people weren't even really aware of what YouTube was. But it didn't matter. I was on there and I was, you know, just trying to help. And it got really big. My channel got really big. I got to, I think in the end, it got to about 38 million hits across five strategic channels. But what really defined the last sort of half of my career is that a lot of those job seekers were coming to me saying, thanks for your videos. Now I found a job. How do I tell people that I'm gay? or how do I tell people, how do I handle the fact that I'm being bullied, or I'm a manager now, do I have to dress differently? You know, all of this stuff was coming up, and I wasn't best qualified to give this advice, right? And I was very, I'm very aware of staying in my lane. If you ask me a question and I'm not the best person to answer, I will tell you I am not the best person. I think running my own company for so long, having so many people give you advice, even when you don't ask for it, I'm really aware of that. So I thought, right, okay, I know a lot of really talented people. So if I could raise some investment, raise some funding, record, upgrade my production, you know, don't need to be in my kitchen with a bottle of vodka in the back on top of the fridge and dirty dishes, you know, like a proper production, I could make turn this thing into a thing, right? So that's what I did. So I went out and raised venture capital funding across two continents, angel investment, seven angels in total, and we turned the YouTube channel Career Cake into an e-learning platform. We serve 10 million people, 10 million learners in 42 countries over the time that we ran it as an e-learning platform. We licensed content to LinkedIn Learning. We had 3 million professionals looking at our stuff, our content via LinkedIn Learning. That was a beautiful partnership that we were really proud of. And then in the end, it was acquired. It was acquired by a business called Social Talents, who are the leading hiring skills platform. And that was about 18 months ago. And then I had a baby 3 weeks later. And now I'm talking to you.
Oh my gosh, Amy, like when you were just describing, I mean, can we just stop and give you a round of applause? Because that achievement, like when you talked about that partnership with LinkedIn, the amount of people that you reached, and you started it from your kitchen with a bottle of vodka behind you, like, hello, well yeah. done. Does it feel surreal? No, not yet.
I think it will. And for people that I've spoken to that have built big things and exited and got there, you know, got all of that, I still feel like the 15-year-old kid who I grew up in foster care, you know, the 15-year-old kid that everybody's judging. I don't feel like that. I mean, I feel it in the sense of I was tired, I was broken, you know, I was happy, I felt the thing. But looking back on it, it still feels like it was a film I watched or a story that I read. I haven't quite connected to the journey quite yet, but I know that that's really common. I have a lot of mentors and a lot of wonderful people in my life that have been there, done it, got the T-shirt, that are 10 steps ahead of where I am now. And I had a beautiful team, like such a talented team. That was one of the things I think that is one of my strengths. I'm able to attract very, very clever people and provide an environment where they can thrive. And that was, I think, one of the keys to my success, hiring people that know more about something than you do and being okay with letting them do their thing. But I know it's normal to feel like this, and eventually I'll recognize it, or I'll just, yeah, I mean, I've still got to feed the dogs and walk the dogs. You know, I've still got to just get on with life. So I'm always thinking about the present really and tomorrow rather than reflecting. I don't really go there very often, but obviously you just asked me, so I had to.
And then you had a baby 3 weeks later. So for anyone listening, because before we started the pod, before we hit record, we were talking about the whole side hustle thing. I know many of my friends and acquaintances are doing both. And I know that a lot of our audience are maybe doing both, or are maybe wanting to go off and set their own business. So it is an inspiring story. And you talk about it, you come at it from such a real place, like the fact that you had a baby and then you just say, I was really tired. I mean, I bet you were exhausted. But what an achievement.
Actually, I think there was certainly an element of me, I think, that might even have had PTSD. So building that business was doing what I did, even with a really, really great team, you're still the founder. And I was a solo founder. So there's a lot of burden to carry, a lot of responsibility, a lot of unfamiliar rooms that you find yourself in, a lot of, you know, moments where you're really scared. And you kind of have to just get on with things and put certain things. So, I mean, I'll go there, but I had 5 miscarriages, for example, during the last 3 years of running that business. And I wasn't really able to deal with those things, certainly, you know, medically or even emotionally, because I had, you know, I had stuff to do. I had a business to run. I had people to keep, you know, I had to feed people, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think there was a lot of, I also, during the last part of my business, I found myself not wanting to be a CEO, and I wasn't enjoying what I was doing. I was no longer coaching and mentoring. I was no longer helping brilliant people be fabulous. I was speaking to lawyers and investors and accountants, you know. So there was I'd really lost myself. So there was a lot going on. So then for me, that the acquisition process took about 9 months, which is actually not that long, considering the company that acquired my company was outside of the UK. That's actually quite normal. It's quite good. And even though the business that were acquiring us were brilliant, I got on really well with them. The founders were a complete joy. I was still navigating, who am I? What's my purpose? What am I going to do now while being pregnant? And it's my first baby. And obviously my sixth pregnancy, there was a lot of anxiety around that too. So I think when the papers were signed and I actually gave birth to my son, I was just tired. It was just time to just delete social media, disappear for a bit and just regroup. And it's been 19 months now, and I only kind of now feel ready to be having conversations and to really care about life again, really, in the way that I used to, you know, be excited. I've been very much in this little bubble with my husband and my dogs and my baby, and just putting myself first as much as you can with the baby, but, you know, putting myself first, which is something that I didn't do for a very long time.
Well, you know, thank you for sharing. I mean, that's what you went through. I think it's really powerful when we share those stories, because I think people listening will have maybe been through similar, not necessarily with your having your company acquired, but, you know, like dealing with loss in the workplace. I went to an International Women's Day event last year, and there was a speaker, and she said she started to share her story of trying to get pregnant in IVF. And she talked about miscarrying at work in a meeting, like, yeah, over and over. And it was so powerful. But I thought at the time, it is really important that we talk about it, because I had a miscarriage and I just hid it away from everyone, even my best friends. I went through the process. So I think, thank you for sharing that. But wow.
To one in four of us. I mean, it happens. It happens. And, you know, it happens in the toilets at work. It happens in the middle of meetings. It happens, you know, it happens. And I think that that's the thing that I want to talk about, because I didn't really talk about it. In fact, one of them was in a meeting, and I carried on the meeting, and I pretend, and it was my first rodeo. I knew what was happening, but I continued the meeting and made an excuse that I drank too much coffee. And that was why I was going back and forth to the toilet. And then when I finished my board meeting, I whispered to my colleague, I went to hospital. Like, what is that about? Like, what absolute, can I say, bullshit is that about? Now, everyone in that meeting, all men, were brilliant. Like, I could have walked into that room and told those men, and they would have put their arms around me. Like, I was the CEO, for God's sake. You know, I could have closed the meeting. It was my blooming meeting. It was my company. But there's this historical legacy, I feel, as women, that we are, I wanted to be the people pleaser, right? I didn't want to be the, I knew one of those investors had 15 investments and I was the only female founder, right? At 15. I didn't want to be the emotional one. I didn't want to be the one bringing her personal stuff to the room. And bullshit, absolute bullshit. Those men were brilliant. It's historical legacy stuff that we carry with us as women. So there'll be people watching, listening to this, and, you know, they'll be in the most beautiful environment, right? They'll be really brilliant women and they'll be seen, heard and valued in their job, but they will still have a meeting and they'll come out of it and feel like, I shouldn't have said that. Or maybe, what they're going to think, because I should have reworded that. Or they'll worry about what people think of them. And it's not to do with their job. It's to do with the job that they had last time, or the job before the job. There will be something in their career legacy that's happened to them that's made them feel like, then, you know, that they have to please people.
And what would you say to those people? Because I've been one of those people.
Yeah, and I'm a coach. So I'm an executive coach. I'm currently coaching four brilliant women at the top of their games, all employed in brilliant businesses, and they are still all bringing legacy stuff to their current jobs. It happens to us all.
So when we think back, obviously you're coaching high-level women now, which is brilliant. I mean, I think we all need a coach, a therapist and a coach, please, for me. And when you think back to the content you were creating, what challenges are we up against? Obviously, we've talked about that legacy stuff, but as women, we've got the patriarchy, what we're told, what we think, how we should behave. What challenges have you seen in your expansive career?
I think a lot of it is it comes down to two things, confidence and visibility. So, you know, there is still, the workplace is changing. It's changing fast. It's brilliant. But there are still women, experienced women, that are finding it challenging to be seen, heard and valued, not necessarily in their job, but maybe in their professional space. So maybe in, you know, networking events or, you know, external stuff. Maybe they're killing it and they're fine in their current job, but in this space, they have moments. And advocating for themselves, really, I think is one of those things. The word ambitious, I love the word ambitious, but you know, I want to redefine, and I can see there's some wonderful women out there redefining the word ambition. It's not a dirty word, it's not a bad word, there's nothing wrong with it. You can be ambitious, it's a positive, healthy thing. So I think that there's a lot going on that you know that we're tackling, and it's exciting to be part of that solution.
Yeah, and there's so much work we can do, and I think it's sometimes it's like that feeling of overwhelm because there's so many resources out there, isn't there? Like I'm listening to this new app that it's called Headway, and it gives you like snippets of books, so I'm like constantly taking in loads of information. But then you have those moments where you might feel unconfident, like you use the word confidence and visibility. And sometimes we have good days and bad days. But as women, I feel like we've just got a lot more on our shoulders. So when we're thinking about that visibility aspect, how can, if there's a woman listening that maybe has been at her company for a while or wants to improve how visible she is, how can she do it?
So there's lots of ways, but the first thing is to sort of create something I call a brag file. So this is your evidence file. So really like leaning into your successes. And you don't necessarily have to show anyone. It's not like a folder that you're going to frame and walk around being like, hi, guys, look how good I am. You know, but certainly, you know, when you get an email from a client that says you really listened, or when that colleague comes up to you and says, thank you for holding space for me today. I was really struggling with that project, or whatever it is, when you get those verbals, when you get those tangible pieces of feedback, or when you know that you've done brilliantly, log it. When you know you've done something, log it. So that next time you approach a senior member of staff in your business and you say, look, I'd really like to lead on this project, or you put your hands up for that promotion, or you want to speak up in a meeting and you want to chair something, whatever it might be, you want to make yourself visible. And somebody says, I'm not sure you're the right person. Or somebody says, I'm not sure this is the right time for you. You don't just say, okay, thanks, and walk off. You have evidence. Oh, well, that's interesting because I did something similar 6 months ago with Tom and Sarah on the ABC account, and the client said this. Like, you've got stuff. Like, you have almost, I always think of, you're almost like a builder with with your tool belt. Like, you've got stuff in the belt. You're ready to pull it out. So always, always think about that. And focus on, like, 3 to 5 things. The key strengths that you know that you need to be awesome in your job. Like, you don't need to stay focused, right? Good stuff comes from radical focus. Pick the three to five things. And pick evidence for that. So that's a really, really nice starting point. And I work with clients, and we call them truth letters or truth documents, where you actually have to write down that stuff. It's a piece of work. And sometimes I always start with people, tell me about your best friend or your work bestie. You know, these things fly out of your mouth, but when we have to, you know, advocate for ourselves, it can be challenging. So if you can, and if you struggle with that, do it with somebody that you trust. Do it with somebody, a colleague within work, a mentor, a buddy, and do it and help each other to do that, because I promise you, you'll get a better outcome if you're doing it with somebody that you love and trust and who supports you. So that's a really nice tip to do to help you with your visibility.
I love that. But just to go back, in fact, what that is, for anyone listening, can everyone just start writing, what do we call it? A truth?
you can call it whatever you like. So I call it, so I start, so you, the end result is something called a brag file or a smile file. I have one of my friends calls hers a why I'm hot folder. But the process to get there is I do something which my coach did with me, which is called a truth letter. So it starts with all of the things that you're proud of, and eventually then you look for evidence and put it into a brag file, smile file, whatever you want to call it. But I like to do the truth letter with buddy up with somebody to do that, because it's a bit of a challenging thing to do on your own.
That is absolutely brilliant advice. And oh, how I wish I'd have had that advice in my early career. Mm. It's simple, but so effective. And we're just not doing it, are we? We're not celebrating.
Not doing it, no. And I think for two things, when we haven't got time, life's busy, right? Just sit down and do a truth letter with one of your work buddies. You're like, God, where am I going to get an hour for that? You know, I've got to pick up the kids. I've got to do this. I've got to book that flight, whatever. And also sitting down to write good stuff about yourself can feel really self-indulgent and can feel really sort of like, yeah, doesn't really sit with a lot of people. But I promise you that good thing, because the thing is, if you do that, if you invest in yourself, everyone else will benefit. If you're earning more money, you'll be able to provide for your kids more. If you're feeling seen, heard and valued in the workplace, when you go home, you're a better best friend, a better daughter. You'll have the energy to take your granddad to Tesco's this weekend. Like, if you go home and you are in an environment for 8 hours a day where people see you, feel and hear you and value you, when you go home, your phone's not on silent. You are the best version of yourself for your family and friends. So it's actually the most unselfish thing you can do.
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant advice. And I loved your advice earlier about if they say no, be prepared for people to say no.
Will. Oh my God. Like, it's coming. Like, it comes to everyone. Like, this, you're going to get rejection. If you're not getting any rejection, shame on you, because you're not pushing yourself. Like, how lovely to not get rejection. But that probably means that you're not trying stuff. And so if you're getting rejection and you've had a bit of a tough time, then, you know, how good are you? Like, you're clearly awesome because you're trying stuff.
And having something in your back pocket to say, well, this, I love that example. This worked really well and this client was really happy. It's kind of like, I love it.
I always play it like a chess game. It's a chess game. It's a game. Like, we're not here for long. Like, don't do stuff you don't like. We're not here for long. We're not here for long enough to do stuff you hate. So always play it like a game. It's a chess game. What could be the moves? What are the moves? Where am I going to go? What could their move be? What will my move be?
So play interesting. It. Yeah. And then just to go back a step for the women listening that can't recognize those opportunities, so they want to be more visible, but they just don't know how. So your examples were like, I'd like to lead that meeting or whatever it is. What about the women that are like one step back from that are like, I don't know how?
Yeah. Like, where do I even start? Where do I go? So don't focus on what you want to do. Focus on who you want to be. That would be my best advice. So focus on how you want to feel. Focus on who you, and when I say focus on how you want to feel, what I mean by that is, when you walk in a room, how do you want to feel? When you have conversations with people, how do you want to feel? Do you want to leave? Do you want to feel important when you walk in that room? When you have conversations with people at work, do you want to feel like, do you want to feel kick-ass, or do you want to feel like they were really condescending? Do you want to feel drained? Do you want to feel, nah? Or do you want to feel like, yeah, I really helped. Like, I'm important. Like, I matter. So don't necessarily focus on what you want to do. Focus on the feeling. So I know that when I work with certain type of people, I get off the phone or I get off a call or I can walk out of a meeting and I feel so drained and I'm like, oh God, I need to go home and cuddle the dogs. Like, I'm just like, ugh. I don't want to be around those people. So then I can make decisions that will remove me from those rooms and from those situations. So really focus on the feeling. The next thing is to surround yourself with the people that give you those feelings. So it might be, you probably heard this saying, you are the average of the five people that you surround yourself with. So successful people are really conscious and really, and I'm not talking about your personal life, because sometimes we're related to people, you know, we can't choose our family, sometimes we've got to be around, you know. I'm talking about the professional spaces that you put yourself in. So if, and I always think about them as three different people, you have the high achievers, you have the people that that are doing great things. They're performing. They're killing it. You probably are a high achiever if you're listening to this. You want to be around the people that you're really that make you, that you can learn from, right? The people that inspire you, the people that make you up your game. And then you have sometimes people call them middle performers. And these aren't necessarily people that are just not doing very well. They might be brilliant. They want to learn, but they might just not be in the right roles, or they might not be performing as best as they can because management haven't realized that they're in the wrong room. Like, put them in a different role and they'd be brilliant, kind of thing. And then you have the feeders, right? The people that are just gossiping, they're just nattering, they're bitching about everyone, they just constantly whinging about their life but not doing anything about it. You know, they're the people that, and they usually, unfortunately, these people tend to have really big personalities in the workplace. So it's best to just like be polite, nice, but like avoid them. To be really fulfilled and really happy, yes, you want to be conscious of who you surround yourself with, but the really exceptional careers come when people are strategic about who they're intentional. So it's almost like, I'm conscious, but now I'm going that one step further. I'm going to be intentional about it. So I'm going to identify people in the business or people within my industry. So the people that are one step ahead of where I want to be, I'm going to make sure that I reach out to them, maybe get a mentor. I'm going to find the people that are on the same level as me, on the same journey. We're all in it together. We're failing together. We're succeeding together. We're supporting each other. They might work in other businesses. They might not even be in your business. But they're the people that are on the same journey as you right now. They are your peers. You have to have those people around you. And then you want to identify the people that are 5-1 step behind where you are. And that's the beautiful triangle there of fulfillment, where you've got the people that you're helping raise up. Because if you want to feel valued and you want to feel important, help someone else. The quickest way for us to feel valued is to give value. We know this in psychology. It's the quickest way to put ourselves into a position of power. Help someone else. So that's like the beautiful triangle. So I always ask people to start and really nurturing those relationships, and the opportunities will come. You don't have to worry about that. You just worry, if you focus on those relationships and you build your triangle, your tribe triangle, the opportunities will come.
I absolutely love that tribe triangle. Yes, please. Do you know, it's so funny when you're talking about all of this, and I know I often say I wish I knew this in my early career, but I genuinely do, because I think I could have really taken hold and charge of my career. Whereas when I look back, I feel like I was sort of dictated to by the route that I thought was set out for me. But people listening, you can really start to take control. Like even what you said about pinpointing people in the organization, external people, finding that tribe and that network, and you can almost create your own legacy or your own platform, can't you? Mm-hmm. If you start to work out where you want to go.
I was working with somebody recently. I did a talk last week at a big global PLC, and I talked about this, and they came up to me afterwards and said, oh, but I haven't joined the mentoring, because a lot of workplaces since COVID, a huge amount of workplaces have introduced employee mentorship schemes, which is brilliant, but not everyone is doing that. And if they are doing it, they might not be doing it in the way that suits you as an individual. Start your own. I was like, so start your own. You must meet 2-3 other women that you've met at networking events or that you used to work with, or say to each other, look, we're all wanting to go for a promotion over the next 12, 24 months. We're all struggling with work-life balance. Whatever that is that you're all striving for, whatever that thing is, we're all going through this at the moment. Let's create a WhatsApp group. Entrepreneurs and founders do this brilliantly. It's one of the things that I notice in the founder space. There's a lot of brilliant things that go on in the founder space. And I'm like, employees should be doing this too. Like, their mental health, their success, that matters just as much. Just because you haven't got a business doesn't mean, you know, you don't want to feel successful and happy and, you know, all that stuff. Set up your own and say, look, next time one of us has a meeting and we feel like a piece of crap, or we've got to have a conversation that's a little bit difficult, we don't know, we're a little bit nervous, or next time we get a rejection or we get a no, we're going to jump on. And also celebrate our wins. Maybe every Friday you will send each other your wins. It's another thing that entrepreneurs do. I do this as part of my coaching, my entrepreneur. Every Friday, everybody sends each other their wins for the week. Do that and say, well, we're going to set this WhatsApp group, give it a name, next 12 months, we're in it, five of us, let's go. And that's, you know, that's something that you can do that's tangible, and that will, you know, that'll definitely help.
That is so genius. And I think you're totally right. Having been both an employee and a founder, yeah, it's almost like it can be lonely if you're not sharing, you know, information with your colleagues or leaning on them. I love that idea of creating a WhatsApp group and that support. It makes total sense.
People tell you, don't they, when you're an entrepreneur or you're a founder, it's really lonely. I find it the opposite. Well, being an employee was more lonely, because when I was a founder, everybody was an entrepreneur. Everyone's going to women in leadership, women in business. You know, there's a huge network. It's the employees that aren't getting it, and they should.
Yeah, totally agree. I'm with you. I've got loads that I want to ask you. I just wanted to jump back one step to, you know, when you mentioned promotion, have you got any top tips, or did you ever do training on how to either recognize? So say someone's listening and they want a promotion, or they just want more money, or they want to go up the ladder and there isn't anything visible, or the company says, "Oh, not this year." Have you done any training on that? How do you ask for a promotion?
No, I used to deliver training on this. I think how to be promotable, I think I had about 500,000 people had watched that on my LinkedIn learning course. So that was what my startup was, helping people succeed in their jobs, in their businesses. So how to be promotable? The first thing is to understand, start with a gap analysis, which sounds really boring, but I can't think of a better, more interesting word to call it. So you look at your current job description, you look at the job description of where you want to go, and then you literally just do a gap analysis, cross, tick, what am I missing? What are the skill sets that I'm currently doing? And chances are, if you're ready for that promotion, you're probably already doing all the things, because a lot of people start doing the job before they do the job, right? So you're just not being paid or recognized for it. So, but if there are any gaps, plug those gaps and plug it now. So you want to start really strategically thinking about promotion, I would say about 6 to 12 months before you ask, or before you put your hand up. So gap analysis, and then obviously it's a no-brainer. When you know those gaps are there, plug the gaps, do something about it. I know I need to do this. I'll spend some time. I'll approach Lucy and ask her if I can buddy up with her during her calls or whatever. I will learn this thing. And then the next thing to do is put your hand up. So let people know that you want to be promoted. That's one of the things that we don't do. Well, I do. I'm quite good at doing that. But a lot of women that I know don't do. It's like, you just think, I'm just going to work really hard and just keep everyone happy, and then they'll approach me. They won't. You have to advocate for yourself, and you have to let them know that you're ready for this promotion, and then go back to your evidence file, you know, all that kind of stuff, why you are right for the role. And then a lot of it is mindset. So you might be thinking, okay, I'm going to have to go for this, but I also know that Susan's going for it. Or I also know that Kevin's going for it. Or I also know that Abdul's going for it, and he's got way more experience than me. So then it's a mindset thing. So ask yourself these three questions. One, if I go for this promotion, how will other people benefit from me getting this thing, going for this thing? And that's other people. That could be your friends, your family. Will you have more time with your colleagues? Will you be able to live in a bigger house? Will you be able to support your mum more with her bills? You know, what will it mean? Can you move locations? Blah, blah, blah. The next thing is, how will the organization benefit from me doing this thing? And that's quite straightforward. That will come back to that. There'll be a commercial answer there. So that'll be to do with your value and what you bring to the table, and how well you do what you do. So you'll go back to your evidence list. And then the last thing is, how will I benefit from doing this thing? And that's where I really want to spend the most time. So go back to the feeling. How will you feel? How will you benefit? How will you grow spiritually? How will you grow emotionally? How will you benefit financially? How will you benefit socially? Will you be invited into rooms that you otherwise wouldn't be invited to, or people now know your name that didn't know your name? Will you have more impact on people that you didn't have impact on before? And really take yourself through that process. And if you do that process, and you only need to spend like 30 minutes on it, and you do that properly, you will be so buzzing to get that promotion that you will go for it. You will absolutely go for it. So they would be the things that I would suggest. I mean, it's a 1-hour course that I teach on this, but if, you know, in a snapshot, they would be the sort of the main things.
That's some great advice. And I love the fact that it's start before you put your hand up, start prepping, do that prep work, get that prep file out. Yeah, genius. Yeah.
You don't own your job. People always go, well, I've got a job, I'm all right. I don't need to, you know. It's like, you haven't got a job. You don't own that. That's not yours. Jobs are owned by companies. Jobs are owned by organisations. You have it as long as they say that you can have it. Mm. But the game can change at any point. Like, I had people come into our offices all the time when I was a recruiter who had just been made redundant or just got a new manager and wanted to leave. And they were like, oh God, I want to leave, but I've got no options. It's like, well, no, because you took your eye off the ball, right? Like, you'd never, ever be in a position where you don't have options. And that comes from owning your career, as cheesy as that sounds, which means that you never take your eye off the ball.
I think that's a great tagline, owning your career. I know you think it sounds cheesy, but I think everything you're saying, people will be like, yes, need to do that more. We've got to wrap up soon, but obviously you have been so successful. You're a founder. You had your business was acquired. So to the women that either are like, I don't want to start my own business, I've got a side hustle, what's the advice for those women? And is that what you're focusing on with your mentor? Are you mentoring now more women in that entrepreneurial world?
Yeah, I think so. So I've been a founder mentor for years, but I think I'm going to be, now I'm back into the professional space. I'm still working with organisations to help their, specifically their senior leadership teams, female senior leadership teams. But spending more time with female founders and female entrepreneurs, whether they've got a day job or whether they're all in on their business, is really, I think, where my heart lies. They say that the place where you experience the most pain is certainly the place you can add the most value. So that's definitely where I'm going to spend the majority of my time. And I would say for anybody starting a business is to really think about what kind of life that you want and what kind of business that you want. So, you know, you could have a big investment backed, venture backed business like I had, where you need external capital, whether that's invested, you see them all on Dragon's Den, in which case you're building it to sell it. So you kind of have to sell it. You have to build it, make it profitable and sell it within 5 to 8 years. That's kind of the terms if you want investment. You don't have to do that. You could build a business without external investors, without venture capital, and fund it from making sales and, you know, winning customers. And then you kind of certainly be more in control of what you want. But running a business is not the easy option. So some people I know, they're like, oh, I'll just start my own business. It's like, because I work too many hours. It's like, if you don't like your 9 to 6 now, then, you know, if you run a business, you'll be working 24 hours. So there's not really any one piece of advice for one size fits all. It would be looking at your current situation, looking at your financial situation, and looking at what you want your life to be and feel like. But if there's an itch and it's just not going away, then yeah. Because I don't want to be an entrepreneur. Like I, given the choice, I would not be an entrepreneur.
Oh, really?
Because it's like, it's the hardest way, right? It's the hardest way to make a living. And if my kids want to be entrepreneurs, I'll beat it out of them. Like, I'm joking. Like, I don't want to be an entrepreneur. I am one. I have no choice. And making peace with that, certainly, you know, I've been successful as an entrepreneur. But in the early days when all I did was eat potatoes because I had no money and I just walked away from a 6-figure salary in the corporate world. I was like, what have I done? And I see all my friends buying houses and going on lovely holidays. And I'm like, well, I don't have a pension. What am I doing? I look like a spud. I'm eating so many potatoes. And I used to sit there thinking, why can't I just not be an entrepreneur? And I made peace with that, which is that I am one, and suck it up. But it's hard. It's the hardest way to make a living, for sure.
And sometimes the grass is greener, isn't it? People
it really
think,
is.
Yeah.
If you're in the right job. If you're in the wrong job, there's nothing worse. There's nothing worse.
Totally agree. And if people want to connect with you and work with you or just find out more, where can they find you?
So I have a YouTube channel, which is Amy Bateman. So it's AIMEE. And I also spend a huge amount of time on LinkedIn. So that's kind of, those are the two platforms that I spend my time on. I'm a big believer in work-life balance. So I'm not everywhere. Spending time with my, you know, with my family is my favorite thing to do in the entire world. So so I only work 3 days a week, and I intend on keeping it that way. This is the woman that took 3 days annual leave 1 year.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I'm a reformed workaholic. So just those platforms, and I'd love to engage or connect or answer any questions or hear the stories of your listeners, really.
Yeah, and your LinkedIn, you're so good on LinkedIn. Okay, I'll put all of the links in the show notes. It was such a pleasure to chat to you today. Thank you for joining us. And I can't wait to see where the future lies for Amy Bateman.
Thank you, Zoe. Thanks for having me.
What a fantastic episode. I think Amy's vitality and enthusiasm just shines through, because she's just so enthusiastic and has so much experience that there's so much that we can take from it. So I really hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you found Amy's journey and story and advice inspiring and helpful for your own career growth, your own career path, whether you are, like I said at the beginning, whether you have your own business, whether you aspire to have your own business, wherever you are. Hopefully you've got something from the episode that you can take away and implement. So be sure to check out the show notes for links to connect with Amy on LinkedIn, and don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Remember that one review is the equivalent to 1,000 downloads, so we need your help. And it also means that you won't miss any future episodes, because you will be alerted when we publish them every Tuesday. So until next time, take care of yourself, and please keep believing in yourself and stay committed to being the boss of your career, because you have totally got this. If you've not joined the membership already, head over to community.jobsforwomen.co.uk/join. It's completely free. We've got loads of content, masterclasses, free yoga, all sorts. And all of our podcast video content is in there in one central place. So that's it for this week. Take care of yourselves, and I will see you next time.